What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
Gators Breakdown. The Gators Fan Podcast. Because there's never a dull moment in Gator Nation.
The Gators Breakdown Podcast is ready to go. I'm your host, David Waters, and you can find me on Twitter at GatorDave_SCC. And joining me for this last opponent preview, our FSU preview, is Will Miles, co-host. And you can find his work at readandreaction.com. You can find him on Twitter at WillMilesSEC. So Will will be wrapping up this, season kicks off in a week or so. And we're wrapping up our opponent previews with the big time rival and season finale, Florida State Seminoles.
Yeah, we held off as long as we could before we had to talk about these guys. But it's always fun. I've been to a bunch of these. And, you know, back when Tebow was putting up 50 on them, it was a lot of fun. So, we'll hope that we can get back to those ways this year.
Exactly. Hopefully it's on that way when two first-year head coaches meet up in Dan Mullen and Willie Taggart. Remember, you can find all the Gators Breakdown episodes on newsforjacks.com/GatorsBreakdown. There you'll find all of our past opponent previews that'll catch you up from all the way from, we didn't go to Charleston Southern, but started with Kentucky, all the way to FSU. So you can go to newsforjacks.com/GatorsBreakdown, catch all of those, as well as the articles from the News for Jack sports team. Oh, hey, catch the podcast on iTunes, Google Play, and YouTube. If you want the video version, follow Gators Breakdown on Twitter and on Facebook at Gators Breakdown. And using all of those services, please rate, share, review the show, and let Gator Nation know what they're getting with Gators Breakdown. So, Will, you know, a lot of the previews that we've done, going back to just recruiting and talking just in general, about this season. When we get to this Florida State game, it is a must-win for Florida this year. You know, these are two first-year head coaches that will always be compared in that manner since they were hired in the same season. You know, and before Dan Mullen was even hired, and when Florida, you know, missed out on Chip Kelly, a lot of there was some of the fan base that started the Willie Taggart hire, you know, for Florida as well, and there was some behind-the-scenes dealings and going on there. So you know, it's kind of funny how everything comes full circle when talking about Willie Taggart here. But you know, this would be the season finale for both schools and for the last game of the season for two first-year head coaches. And you know, as Bill has said, this game is huge. He has the stat here. Ever since 2005, the winner of this game goes on to have the highest-ranked recruiting class the following February.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, Florida and Florida State have only really been good at the same time when there's been, you know, when Spurrier and Bobby Bowden were there, and those are obviously transcendent coaches. When Urban Meyer took over, Bowden was sort of on the way out, and then when Jimbo Fisher started to assert himself, Florida was obviously struggling under Muschamp and McElwain. And so, yeah, I think it's a big deal in the state, especially when you've got Miami with Rick down there, at least pulling in some recruits. Whether they're winning the games they should or not, it's a different question, but pulling in recruits, that this is certainly an important game in the state. It's an important game because Florida hasn't won it in a while. And like you said, you've got the Taggart-Mullen comparisons, and that's going to ramp things up, because it is conceivable that Taggart could have wound up at Florida. You don't know how much went on behind the scenes there, but certainly it's a comparison point, right? Florida and Florida State both hired new coaches this year. They were both very, very close in their transition class recruiting. We'll see where they end up this year in their bump class recruiting, but a lot of that might be determined by what happens on the field here, because if you've got any guys who are oscillating between the two of them, if Florida can really put a stamp on this game and make it, you know, don't win 17-16, but win 31-10, well, all of a sudden people view Gainesville a lot differently than they have the last 4 or 5 years.
Yep. So, you know, Willie Taggart is first and foremost, known, especially in the state of Florida, known as a really good recruiter, but you know, he's built some programs, rebuilt some programs. But Florida State did hire a guy who's yet to win a conference championship, hasn't won a bowl game, has a losing record in his 8 seasons as a head coach. But you know, he really hasn't been around a job long enough. You know, he's brought some talent in the schools, and we know if he had stuck around South Florida and much as they've done, much as winning as they've done the last 2 years, you know, he's responsible for some of that. And if he would have stuck around, you know, his overall record would definitely be better. You know, Charlie Strong went 10-2 at South Florida last year, and you know, that easily could have been with the Tigers team and probably pretty similar results. So, you know, yes, joking between fan bases, don't get me wrong, it is still a point of contention of his overall record, but you know, if he stuck around some of the places, that overall record probably would be a little bit better.
Yeah, I would think so. But I mean, part of it, he has not made an immediate impact when he's come into the different schools. When he came into Western Kentucky, again, he's an offensive guy, comes into Western Kentucky in 2009, they were 80th in yards per play, went down to 101st. When he came to South Florida, they were 83rd, went down to 123rd. And when he came to Oregon, they were 20th in yards per play, and they went down to 43rd. So each of his three stops, the offense has actually gotten worse on a yards per play basis. Now, points per game has improved slightly for a couple of those stops. But again, I think if we're really, you know, if you're looking at underlying statistics to understand what happens to a team when Taggart comes in, there's been an adjustment period in the offense. Now, obviously at Western Kentucky and at South Florida, the offense started to take hold. At Oregon, you can't really tell because he was only there for a year. You know, and really the determining factor in his success has been the defenses. So at Oregon, the defense went from 71st in yards per play to 30th. That's why Oregon got better between 2016 to 2017. And obviously that's more crystal ball. And, you know, Taggart isn't a defensive coach.
It was Leavitt, right?
Or I'm sorry. Yeah. Leavitt. So, you know, so Taggart isn't necessarily a defensive guy. He certainly has sort of invented his own offense, but I don't know that he's necessarily shown, at least in year one, that he has definitely not shown a huge impact on the teams that he's taken over. Now he's got a lot more talent at Florida State than he had at any of those three stops, but you know, again, if he sees the same kind of decrease in offense, Florida State's going to be in trouble because they didn't have a whole lot last year.
Yep, and going back to last year, he is taking over a FSU team that went 7-6. Hey, look, close calls, NC State, Miami, Louisville. Those games could have went either way, but it's still finished 7-6. You know, just remember Gator game last year where Felipe Franks really helped them out a lot. But you know, still a lot of moving parts. You know, it's not instant come in and fix it right away. You quarterback position, you know, quarterback battle there. That looks like DeAndre Francois is going to win there. A beat up offensive line, and still you go back in the spring. They're still figuring out parts along that offensive line there. Wide receiver core doesn't have a for sure thing. They got talent there, just nothing, not a whole lot proven there. And you know, look, this is a different offense. You know, Jimbo Fisher's known for more of the pro style, drop back style, and now you're coming in with this speed them up, spread style of offense, and you know, a lot of quarterback runs. You know, and Taggart did adjust a little last year at Oregon, you know, with more of a quarterback that could throw the ball. So, you know, I think he can adjust a bit, but you know, just still as talent that has to take hold from a pro style to a now more spread style.
Yeah, I want to go back to something you said there about the close calls. And certainly NC State, Miami, and Louisville were all one-score games that Florida State could have won. But they also struggled against Wake Forest, Duke, and Syracuse. They were 3-3 in one-score games. And one-score games against Wake Forest, Duke, and Syracuse are not a place where you want to be if you're a Power 5 team who has aspirations of winning championships, which is what Florida State came into last year, at least, you know, thinking at least they'd be able to compete against Alabama in that first game. And it just really wasn't all that close. So, you know, I think there's clearly a lot of work to do. Most of the work needs to be done on the offensive side of the ball. So they were 88th in offensive yards per play, 67th in pass yards per play, 76th in rush yards per play. So, you know, not explosive at either place. But again, there were extenuating circumstances with Jimbo Fisher and all the Texas A&M rumors. I mean, we certainly experienced that on the Florida side with Jim McElwain right around the Georgia and Missouri games. So, you know, I expect them to be better on offense this year, but like I said, Taggart hasn't necessarily shown that. And so a lot of it probably is going to be on the arm of the quarterback, and we'll see who they decide to go with there.
Yep. So, you know, spread, speed, tempo, that's what they're going to bring. And Walt Bell comes over from Maryland as the offensive coordinator. Kind of, you know, interesting, you know, it still was Willie Taggart's offense. So, you know, I think we'll see how those two work together there. It's going to be difficult if that offensive line isn't much better. Center Alec Eberle, excuse me. No, you know, he's, you know, probably the best of the bunch there. But health, you know, they were beat up in the spring, so they need to develop some depth early on. It'd be interesting to see how much the staff could implement all they wanted to due to the injuries, you know, going back in the spring, you know, with players learning a new offense and you're struggling to find pieces to fit into the puzzle because of injuries in the springtime, you know, it may have slowed down the development a little.
Well, not only that, but you've got all the, you've got the two guys fighting for the quarterback position between Francois and Blackmon. And so, you know, we talked about this last year with Florida having three guys fighting for the quarterback. And, you know, if you're trying to develop and you haven't picked that quarterback yet, that can really impact the development too. So, yeah, it's, you know, the guys that they've got are not necessarily designed for the system that they're trying to implement. You know, the quarterback, Francois 2 years ago had 108 rushing attempts. Blackmon last year had 64. So it's not as if these guys are running, you know, 180 times a year like you would in a spread offense. Certainly not the same thing as the guys that Taggart's had at Oregon or at USF. And so he's going to have to make some adjustments. We'll see if he can do that.
Yeah, you mentioned that there is experience there, of course, but, you know, experience in a wholly different system, as we were talking about, you know, James Blackmon, you know, really, really skinny kid. Could he, you know, if he has to run the ball a lot, could he, you know, if he gets a lot of playing time, could he hold up there? Bailey Hockman got his shot as well, but it looks like it's going to be DeAndre Francois, you know, coming back from that knee injury against Alabama. Looks like he'll be the guy. He is the most complete quarterback of the three guys. Could push the ball down the field. He can run a little bit. We'll see how he, you know, transfers to this, what they call Gulf Coast offense. Probably the most accurate out of the two there, as well with his arms. So, and, you know, a consistent fall camp pretty much leads him to be the starter, I believe. You know, we'll see. We're recording this on Sunday night. I'm pretty sure Willie Taggart will name his starting quarterback on Monday as well. One reason we decided to kind of wait and do this FSU preview is to see if FSU would name a starting quarterback. But, you know, he had a – when he – that full season, you go back to Will, you know, 3,350 yards passing, 20 scores, you know, 7 picks. He's a talented quarterback, a smart quarterback under Jimbo Fisher. And as we just mentioned many times, we'll see how he comes along in this new offense. But, you know, he also going to have to find some guys to throw to. As we mentioned, these receivers, Alden Tate's gone, along with Ryan Izzo. But Naquan Murray led the team in receiving yards last year. He returns. George Campbell's good when he's healthy. And you have to go back to the spring and to Morian Terry, a good-looking guy there who had a really good spring. So, but the group struggled with consistency. So given all these new pieces, a quarterback that's going to have to fit into a new system, a wide receiver core, that's kind of inconsistent, unproven. They may be relying on this run game with Cam Akers.
Yeah, they definitely will be. Now, I would say that Francois is definitely the guy I would choose. So he only completed 58.8% of his passes 2 years ago, but Blackmon only completed 58.2% last year. The big difference between the two of them was that Francois averaged 8.4 yards per attempt, while Blackmon only averaged 7.5. And so, you know, that really is where the difference between those two guys are. Also, Francois averaged 1.8 yards per rush, and Blackmon was minus 0.6. So he's more of a running threat as well than Blackmon, even though, you know, it feels like Blackmon should move around a little bit better. Now, we'll see what happens coming off that patella injury. That's not a joke. I mean, they got to split your knee right down the middle to fix that. I've had that one done, and it is not a comfortable thing, and it's not comfortable to get hit down there, you know, even 2 or 3 years later. And so now how's he going to be coming off of that? Is he going to be comfortable back in the pocket? Is he going to be comfortable running some of the things that Taggart wants to do? And yeah, I think Akers is the most talented guy on the offense, and he's the guy that they're going to rely on very heavily, especially early on.
Yeah, you know, and him and Patrick, Jacques Patrick, you know, a pretty good 1-2 punch there, 1,800 yards, 14 scores. You know, and as I mentioned, the offensive line who didn't really live up to the expectations last year, but, you know, going back for Cam Akers, he was big-time recruit. Didn't really live up to the big-time billing that he had coming in, you know, 1,025 yards, 7 touchdowns. But, you know, 5'11", 213, 199 yards, 2 scores versus Syracuse, 121 against Miami. He wants to do it all by himself. As I remember, Jacques Patrick with him as well. And they'll find some imaginative ways to get Kalen Laybourne, a youngster there, redshirt freshman who was really lit it up in the spring. You know, they got three good running backs there. But you know, I still think Cam Akers is really going to have to take that next step to be that big star running back. And he'll have every opportunity in this run-heavy offense, I expect, from Willie Taggart.
Sure. I mean, I think that one of the things we do need to keep in mind is he ran for 1,025 yards, like you said, with a 5.3 average. That's better than any of the guys on Florida's roster have done, have
except,
on their resumes right now.
From Malik Davis.
Yards per carry, that's true. But yeah. But with that kind of volume as well, you know, Florida, I don't think, has had a 1,000-yard rusher since Kelvin Taylor. Mm-hmm. And he certainly wasn't averaging over 5 yards a rush. So, you know, is it Dalvin Cook? No, but that's one of the things we sort of said about Georgia is that Sony Michel and Nick Chubb are really, really good. And to expect DeAndre Swift to come in and play maybe like Akers is probably an appropriate comparison. To expect him to play like Michel and Chubb right off the bat, probably not a reasonable thing. I think the same thing with Florida State and Akers. It seemed like he was significantly less of a threat than you know, just because we were used to Dalvin Cook being back there. And every time he got the ball, he could take it to the house. Akers may not be that kind of guy, but he's still a really good running back. And I think we need to keep that in mind. Patrick averaged 5.6 yards per rush on 134 carries. So a pretty significant number of carries back there. You know, they're going to be good running the ball. But again, like you said, a lot of that's going to come down to the offensive line. And there, you know, they do have a couple of guys. They've got a senior, Alec Eberle, at center. They've got Derek Kelly, a senior at left tackle. Then they've got a junior at right guard, Cole Minshaw, and then Landon Dickerson and Josh Ball are sophomores, but four-star guys at left guard and right tackle. So they, you know, some of those guys were just getting their first playing time last year. You only need one offensive lineman to screw up an assignment to get a guy hit in the backfield. I do expect that they'll be better there, but they are learning a new, new system. And early on, this probably won't apply for when Florida's playing them, but early on, you can, I can envision some issues where they might have. They might have some issues with the quarterback exchange with the running back. You see that a lot when people shift from a pro style offense to more of a spread, where that exchange becomes an issue. And it really only takes a couple of games to sort of have things go downhill. I mean, we saw that last year with Florida. We saw that last year with Florida State. You know, all of a sudden they were sort of looking up at 1-3, and you know, it was just sort of fighting uphill the rest of the year, having to reschedule a hurricane game to make the bowl game. So, you know, I think they're in a better position this year to run the ball, just with the experience in the offensive line. But I think what you outlined in terms of the skill players is true, that Akers is obviously a really, really talented wide receiver. They don't have anybody who jumps off the page at the wide receiver position. There's nobody that I go, oh, we have to stop that guy, or, oh, we don't have the secondary to stop that guy. So I'm not necessarily worried about him putting up 45 points. You know, the question is always with Florida, is 17 enough? and we'll have to figure that out.
All right, well, we move to the other side of the ball, and they got to replace, you know, some big-time defensive backs there. Look, you know, it'd be hard to replace Derwin James, and a starting linebacker core from the end of last year is gone or hurt. And the defensive line lost, you know, some pieces in Josh Sweat and Derek Nnadi. And we'll start with the defensive front. Derek Nnadi, Josh Sweat gone, but, you know, DeMarcus Christmas comes back on the inside. Brian Burns, I'm telling you, I remember, you know, him in the recruiting world and how much I wanted him at Florida. You know, he's out there at FSU making plays now. You know, but more so as a freshman going back 2 years ago, 9.5 sacks. He was expected to be, you know, build upon that and be even bigger playmaker. And, you know, didn't necessarily take that next step. He was okay, 48 tackles, you know, but lowered his sacks by 4.5 sacks. 13.5 tackles for a loss there. You know, he didn't rip it up like we thought he would. So can he put it all together in his third year? Hey, look, and this is going to be maybe that NFL year. So, you know, go out there and put some stats up. But 6'5", 231, really quick guy, great first step. Pass rush was just okay, but there just wasn't enough plays in the backfield by Florida State standards. So it'd be a loaded line. But, you know, it's probably something that gets better as the year goes on. Definitely led by Burns there.
Yeah, they've recruited very, very well up front. Certainly better at defensive line and linebacker than Florida has over the last few years.
And have we seen that mismatch every year?
Well, yes, we have. I mean, I think Felipe Franks is still having some nightmares from last year's game, probably. But, you know, none of the guys that they brought in who have been high level recruits, again, have been somebody where I've been like, okay, I'm really, really scared of him. I mean, Josh Sweat last year had 5.5 sacks, and you sort of thought he might break out at any time. Certainly had a lot of athletic ability, didn't necessarily translate into a ton of big plays. Same thing you said with Burns. You know, so we'll see whether Taggart can get more out of them than Jimbo Fisher and his staff did. Again, I think reading into this a little bit, there was some weird stuff going on in that locker room, just like there was in Florida's. And so some of these guys may have, you know, may have had some issues that were off the field that just, you know, with the staff and with what was going on. And maybe that impacted some of the on-field performance. You know, Derwin James obviously was very, very talented. I'm not sure that talent always necessarily translated onto the field. I think that's one of the frustrations that people had with Jimbo Fisher and his staff. I was a little bit surprised at how angry Florida State was at their coach last year. But yeah, I mean, Burns is the guy who's going to have to step up. Burns and Christmas are the guys that I think you really need to be looking at, along with Josh Kando, you know, a five-star recruit. He's a sophomore, played pretty well last year. I think those are the guys. So Kando had 6.5 tackles for loss, 4 sacks. If those guys step up and really put pressure on the quarterback, Florida State's defense could be pretty good.
Yeah, and you go back to the linebackers there, so you know, some good athletes there. Leading tackler Matthew Thomas, though, is gone, and so is Hoskins, Roderick Hoskins, Emmett Rice, trying to come back from an injury. So probably a smaller group, but Adonis Thomas, really the name to look out for there at one of the outside spots. Dontavius Jackson stepping up in the middle. Jackson could be good with a little bit of time there. Not really a weakness, but it's the, you know, linebacker is a spot they really have to work on with the pieces that they have coming back that have a little bit of experience.
Yeah, well, that's actually a common theme on both sides of the ball for Florida State. So overall, if you look at Phil Steele starting 22, they average 2.5 years of experience, both offense and defense. It's 2.55 years of experience on the offensive side, 2.45 on the defensive side. So they're 3 on the offensive line. The linebackers are 2.33 and the defensive backs are 2.25. So very, very inexperienced at the linebacker and the defensive back position. And that's going to present itself throughout the season. It just is. So if you compare that to Florida, their defensive line averages 3 years of experience. The linebackers average 3.25 and the defensive backs average 2.25. So Florida has significantly more experience than Florida State. And one of the things that we've noticed, you know, anybody who's been a Florida fan for any length of time remembers that 2007 season. We've talked about it in reference to Georgia again, but that 2007 season where Florida had an awful lot of talent, but they didn't have the experience, and that team struggled on defense, even though Tebow won the Heisman Trophy and then was lights out the next year. You know, Florida State has really good talent on the defensive side of the ball, but it's not that kind of talent on the defensive side of the ball. And certainly with that lack of experience, I think there are going to be some things you can do. Assuming you get time, you know, there will be some double moves. You can run on the corners. You can do some things to really isolate some of those guys. I think that's something Mullen, more so than McElwain, should be able to take advantage of.
Yeah, and then you guys got secondary and, you know, like I mentioned, the pieces they missed there. You know, and like Will, like you said, you know, going back and – probably everything they had to face in their own locker room too. You know, a lot of talent there, maybe still didn't live up to expectations. You know, as one of the all-time great defensive back, feels like you kind of thought maybe going into last year that they could, but you know, still very talented. Lose Derwin James, Nate Andrews, Tavares McFadden, Trey Marshall, but it is Florida State. They'll be able to, you know, just like Florida, they turn DBs and put them in there too, as well. Levante Taylor, he's one guy that they'll keep at corner. Kyle Myers is probably going to be the other corner on the other side. You know, Stanford Samuels can play anywhere. Might take a little bit, but you know, they'll have pieces that come together. But you're probably kind of looking like maybe Florida did last year. They'll have guys that can come in. There'll be some growing pains, but they'll also, when the season's over with, you look at them as a whole and say they were pretty talented, and you can see the potential.
Yeah, but they're really, really young. And certainly, so if you look last year, Florida State was 14th in defensive yards per play. They were 5th in defensive pass yards per play. And they were a little bit unlucky, so they were 30th in points per game allowed at 21.2. So they played a little bit worse than their underlying stats would have suggested and gave up a few more points than their underlying stats would suggest. And some of that, I think, is due to the offense sort of putting them in some bad positions. But they aren't going to repeat 5th in defensive pass yards per play with these guys, just based on who they've lost in the secondary, you know, particularly Derwin James. And so if that goes down a little bit, you can anticipate that maybe they're a little bit luckier this year and they don't have that discrepancy between their yards per play and their points per game. But I would imagine their points per game is probably going to end up around the same place, because I'm anticipating their secondary is going to be worse.
Yeah, they have 15 takeaways as a defense as a whole last year. So, you know, they would think, you know, definitely, I mean, definitely want more than that. First half of the season last year, they only had, you know, 6 turnovers in the first 8 games. So, got better as the season went on there, but, you know, not pressuring the quarterback as much as years past there, you know, probably plays a part in that. So, Will, you know, also, this is kind of an interest for you is because also your other team, Virginia Tech, plays FSU week 1. So FSU is their schedule is bookended by your teams.
Hey man, I'll be cheering on Fuente and the Hokies the whole time that's going on, and certainly it's good to have two teams because then I can then I got 6 hours a day I can commit to this stuff, or 7 hours a day I can commit to this stuff rather than just the 3.5. But no, it'll be good to get a sneak peek. I think Virginia Tech and Frank Beamer is one of the teams that I really think plays. They scheme individually. You know, they've got their base defense, but he usually throws some things, especially these games where he's got some time, will throw some things at Florida State that Florida State hasn't seen. So I think there are probably some things that Florida will be able to learn from looking at that tape, but also some things that maybe they want to avoid from looking at that tape, just because I'm sure there will be some new wrinkles from the Florida State side as well.
All right, Will. So that was the last one we've done. We've previewed every opponent Florida has faced here. You know, things I take away from what we did, and you know, because we got to learn a lot more about these teams than, you know, if we wouldn't have done this. You know, of course, we had to research and do all that, you know, to bring our listeners, you know, what we think are key parts of the teams that Florida will face. And, you know, I came away thinking behind Georgia, I think, you know, Florida, Missouri, and South Carolina are a lot closer than I probably originally thought. I think those teams. You know, and like I said, you know, I was splitting hairs at SEC Media Days when I was making picks here. You know, I said when it's close, bias takes over. So that's why I picked Florida second in the East. Like I said, I had no problem people picking South Carolina. I thought Missouri was a little further behind until I did a little more research in preparing for this. So, you know, I know I mentioned that in the last episode when we got done with South Carolina here. But that was one, you know, one big takeaway there. And just also, you know, that stretch in the middle of the season, or the beginning of the season when you have Tennessee at Tennessee, LSU, and Mississippi State, you know, that trifecta there. You know, we've talked about that on a recent podcast as well. But you know, those are my two biggest takeaways from doing this is the teams behind Georgia in that next tier are really, really close. And Florida, that all-important stretch for me of Tennessee, Mississippi State, and LSU.
Yeah, the two things I really took away from it, I guess, are South Carolina was really lucky last year. They went 6-1 in close games. I didn't realize that. I knew I wasn't really afraid of Bentley, but it wasn't clear to me why South Carolina went 9-4 until I saw that they were 6-1 in close games, and that is definitely not must champion. So I expect that to be 3-3 or 3-4 this year, and they'll be right back to where we expect a must champ team to be. I would say the other thing that you know, you see all the recruiting for Georgia, and you see the separation, and it becomes this exercise of, you know, you don't want to feel completely hopeless going into the game against Georgia. And I think when we started breaking down Georgia, particularly since we had to do it twice since you erased the first one, when we started breaking down Georgia, there are reasons for hope, right? Yeah. When you look back at where they were last year when Eason went out and Fromm took over, there were some things that went their way that if they don't go their way this year, then Georgia can be had for a game or two in the SEC. I don't expect them to go 7-6, but I can see them going 10-2. And if they go 10-2, that gives a team an opportunity like Missouri, like Florida, like maybe even Tennessee to jump up into that area, you know, to jump up even a 9-3 team. If one of those losses is at a conference, like Florida loses to Florida State, loses 2 SEC games, but happens to beat Georgia, and Georgia goes 10-2 and loses to, you know, Tennessee and LSU, well, you can see an avenue for Florida to sneak their way in. And so that's something that I don't think heading in, I think it was basically like, hey, Georgia's number one. It's not even close. And, you know, let's just prepare for 2019. I'm not there. I mean, I still think they're the most likely team to win the SEC East, but I can see some holes and I can see a path to another team winning. And that was something that I probably didn't see on the way, you know, on the way into these.
Another thing I learned is you're a little bit higher on Tennessee than most people.
I am a little bit higher on Tennessee. They've got quite a bit of talent. You know, when you look at where they have recruited compared to some of the other contemporaries. And so, you know, can Pruitt do something with that? I don't know. I know I'm more scared of him having not seen him coach a game than I was of Butch Jones having seen him coach many games. And so, you know, until he proves to me that he's as bad as Butch Jones, that I'm going to be more scared of Tennessee than I was when Butch Jones was there. So it's almost like it's a wins above replacement type of thing here, where Butch Jones was good for two or three gaffes a year that would cost Tennessee a game they should win against Vanderbilt or Missouri or somebody else who was a bottom feeder. And you know, I think Pruitt, if he only wins the games he's supposed to win based on talent, Tennessee will be a lot better than they were under Butch.
Yeah. All in all, Will, you know, doing this for the 10 games we did it, we didn't do Charleston Southern, we didn't do Idaho. You know, a good indicator of where these teams are headed, and you know what, it probably won't play out like we said it did. Said it will.
Oh, no, we're going to be completely wrong. I've already got people giving me crap about Burrow because he's not playing well in scrimmages at LSU, which is fine, because if he comes out and lights it up against Miami, you can bet I'm going to be crowing like you wouldn't believe. But
hey, that's another thing our new listeners have probably learned, is your man crush on Burrow.
Well, this is important because, you know, I've got people sending gifts your way of me spooning him and stuff. So they start getting confused when those things come out. So we got to make sure they know what that's about. But I am excited for the year. I think there are a lot of things on the Florida side that point towards a successful season, but I think there are a lot of places where you can say, hey, there's legitimate reason for concern going into this season. And it's going to be really cool to see how Mullen sort of plugs some of the holes that we saw last year. And if he's able to do it, and if he can do it, like you said, there's Georgia, who's sort of the clear number one. And then you've got this grouping of other teams who could take second. And I think if Florida can take second, that's got to be considered a successful 2018.
I think so too. So, all right, well, that's it for our opponent previews, taking us into the final or taking us up to game week for the Gators as they host Charleston Southern for the first game of the 2018 season and Dan Mullen's first season in Gainesville. Well, it was fun doing all these, and I hope the listeners got something out of all of them. You know, we've gotten some feedback from all the listeners out there. You know, thanks for doing this, because you know, I don't know if fans want to go out there and buy every preseason magazine and do all their own research, but you know, if they're going to listen to Gators Breakdown, now they can learn about the other opponents as well.
Yeah, well, plus we tried to do this in one podcast last year, and it was like 2.5 hours long. So this worked out a little bit better. Only, you know, keeping people's attention for 30 minutes, and unless we were previewing Vanderbilt, then it was like 12 minutes long. But but other than that, no, it's a good time. It's good to look at this and sort of get a perspective of where Florida is. So I hope everybody enjoyed that. Certainly, we're going to be making point predictions as the year progresses. Yep. There's no real sense in saying we're going to beat Florida State 31-20 right now. Right, like, we just exactly. Don't know. Yeah. You know, there's going to be injuries. There's going to be developments. I mean, you know, Emory Jones may be playing by then, or Felipe Franks may be an All-American. Who knows? So, you know, we'll see how the season progresses, and we'll make those picks then. But yeah, hopefully everybody enjoyed it. And, you know, if nothing else, they can look back and tweet at us that we're idiots after the season.
Yeah, that's one more thing I did want to make clear too. In doing these are our opponent previews, and game previews will be done during the season, usually midweek before the season kicks off. Or before the games kick off for the next opponent there. So we'll later on this week, you know, this is, like I said, we did this one live. All the other ones kind of been pre-recorded, all the other opponent previews. But coming up this week, you know, tomorrow we'll do, you know, this is recorded on Sunday night, heading into game week. On Monday night, I'm sure we'll have Dan Mullen's press conference, and when he named the starting quarterback between Felipe Franks and Kyle Trask. So we'll discuss that. We'll talk about, you know, went back and looked at the Herbie Awards this past weekend. I saw it air on ESPN there. So, you know, we'll kind of piggyback off of that and pick some, you know, popular topics of Florida as far as breakout players, underrated players, secret players, all that good stuff like that. And, you know, it was kind of popular last year. We did it. We'll do some over and unders as far as certain stats go for the Gators.
Yeah, well, hopefully nobody goes back and looks at how we did on our over-unders last year, because we had both Callaway and Scarlett in that over-under episode. So I'm not sure who won, except for the fan experience. I think the fan experience lost on that. But no, it's going to be fun. Can't wait for football season to start. We can finally stop talking about recruiting and stop talking about, you know, what Mullen's going to do and actually see what he does. And I'm excited.
Absolutely. And also working on getting Chris Doering in the middle of the week. That'll be Tuesday or Wednesday, and we'll have Chris Doering come on from the SEC Network, former Gators wide receiver and have him preview the season, preview the first game for the Gators, and we'll take it from there and get the thoughts of Chris Doering.
Sounds good. I'm excited to hear it.
Sounds good. All right, Will, we did it. You can find Will on Twitter at WillMilesSEC and his work at readandreaction.com. I'm David Waters, host of Gators Breakdown. You can find me on Twitter at GatorDave_SEC. Guys and girls out there, thanks for listening to this episode of Gators Breakdown.